Well, the basic thing that we said in the article it's finished, but it has another component. If it's finished, and everything in the universe, everything that we can think of and in the world is fuel, empty, vanity. And a few people will hear that. When they hear it, it's like they've known it all their lives. And then at that instant, they're home. And that's what happened to some of us. I mean, we as a body, as this many people weren't here, but it didn't matter. If you're home, that means you've been there from the beginning of time. So it's like you know the people. Even though you've just met them, it's like you've known them all your whole life. So that's really the... some weird thing about how you trust yourself that you know, that you know. What we're going to read about is from the Apocrypha. It's the letter of Jeremiah. And at one time it was included in the book of Jeremiah in our present Bible. What it is, it's a letter that Jeremiah wrote just before all of the Jews were about to be taken captive and sent to Babylon. And it's a letter that's it's the most distinct, one of the most clearly written, distinct essays against idolatry that there is. And it's pretty important. The remains of this letter were found at the cave in Qumran in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and it was a part of what was then the Jewish Bible. Somebody go to, who's got a Bible? Go to Jeremiah 10, verse 11. Louder, louder, louder.
Shall ye say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens.
Okay, start in verse 11. I know, but you go to Jeremiah 10, read 1 through 14.
Read
real slow.
Real slow?
Hear you.
Do your S's.
Do your S's.
Hear ye the word which the Lord speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord.
Never mind. Hear ye the word which the house, hear ye the word which the Lord speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen. Now the way of the heathen, by definition, is whatever way it is that where you have grown up. Look around you, look around us. The value systems of the religious world, the value systems of the secular world, the value systems of the entire world around us are the way of the heathen. They have no merit in the economy of God. They're a waste. We've said before, look at Dallas. Dallas is a city that's built on usury. There's nothing real here. It's built on the backs of debt. It's sick. And yet the city fathers, and I used to be one of them, I was heavily involved in the goals for Dallas in the late 60s. Dallas, the city that hasn't any reason to be, except, you know, we said all this BS about the spirit of the leaders. And do you know that Dallas is the largest landlocked city in the world, except for Peking? Oh. There's no reason for it to be here except for greed. So learn not the way of the heathen. And be not dismayed at the signs of heaven. Don't be worried about what's going to happen. I promise you we're going to be in for the greatest economic disaster the world has ever seen. Shortly. It'll be meaningless to us. The rest of the world will be jumping out of windows.
Can you really see it?
When we as a body started in 1976, the United States was the richest nation that had ever existed in the history of the world. It had more, its surplus and its riches were more than all the rest of the nations of the world that had ever existed combined. Today, we're the poorest nation in the world. The debt that we are in today is more than the combined debt of all nations that have ever existed in the world. We went from the richest nation in the universe to the poorest nation in the universe in the exact span that we as a body have been in extent. Now, I don't know, but it's just interesting. In the short time, where the heathen are dismayed at them, do not fear what they fear, do not be dismayed at what they're dismayed at. Do not value what they value. Jesus said, "You are they that justify yourselves among men, for God knoweth your heart. That which is highly esteemed among men is abomination unto God." I promise you, if there's anything in your value system that's highly esteemed among other men, it's an abomination unto God. For the customs of the people are vain. The word vain there doesn't mean that you like to look in the mirror. The word vain in the scriptures mean futile, empty, valueless, without any redeeming value whatsoever. The customs of the people are vain. For one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold, and they fasten it with nails and with hammers that move not. They are upright as the palm tree, but speak not. They must needs be born because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. Now, we can make fun of ancient idolaters who did that, but what we do, we make the idol in our own mind. We create that idol in our mind, and that idol affects whether or not we're happy or not. That idol affects whether or not we are at peace. That idol affects whether or not we have communion and love for the brethren. What does it do? Again, Harry's the easiest one to pick on. I ask Harry to do something. So Harry gets his grandiose scheme in his mind and a schedule. I may even give him a schedule. And Harry gets so nervous and so uptight because there's this thing in his mind that says that he has to have this done at this date. I said, "Harry, my God, we created the date." But it becomes such an important, quick idol that he will murder everybody, including himself, at the expense of in order to achieve that idol. He will cause himself to be in total misery in order to serve that idol that he created in his mind. Every one of you are the same. Harry just happens to be most obvious. Every one of you have a definition of what you think is successful. When it doesn't meet that definition, it destroys you. You do it especially in relationships with people. Oh, you get so lonely.
You're making reference to people making deadlines.
Or anything. Any opinion that you have about the way things should be is an idol. It's a graven, and the words, the ideas that you have about that are the graven images. They're just as sure as if you took and made a solid gold
yeehaw
plate.
What? I was searching for a word, and I said yeehaw.
Cow. Yeehaw. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
That wasn't the word he was searching for.
Is it Luke?
For as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord, thou art great, and thy name is great in might. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain, for as much as among all the wise men of the nations, and in all their kingdoms there is none like unto thee. They are altogether brutish and foolish. The stock is a doctrine of vanities. They are altogether brutish. The word brutish means animal-like. And you're brutish your animal like if the judgments that you make about life are based on your senses. Then you walk and make judgments as brute beasts. Brute beasts. Can you spell that? Can the class say brute beasts? They are altogether brutish and foolish. Brutish and foolish.
Right before us.
F and B.
Brutish and foolish. I like that. We used to have. We used to, in the stealth, we had sin,
death,
and flesh.
Yeah.
Now we got brutish and foolish.
Brutish and foolish.
Oh, it sounds like two words.
Brutish, foolish, and Ed.
Sounds like a cologne.
Yeah.
Brutish and foolish.
Mr. Ed.
They are altogether brutish and foolish. Yeah. That's probably good when they go down in the annals. Brutish and foolish. The twins.
Say that thing.
A two
times.
Brutish.
The stock is a duck.
The twin. Twins. A two brutish. That's good.
A two brutish.
The stock is a doctrine of vanities. What can I say? What more can I say?
Gary's looking for the door.
I'm just looking around.
A lot of hits over here today.
Huh?
And you thought Ed was over.
He's swinging for the left field wall.
I love that. Their stock is a doctrine of vanities. Look at silver spread into plates is brought from Tarshish, gold from Uphaz, the work of the workmen and of the hands of the founder. Blue and purple is their clothing. They are all the work of cunning men. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God and an everlasting King. At his wrath the earth shall tremble. The nation shall not be able to abide his indignation. Thus shall you say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth, from under these heavens. He hath made the earth by his power, he hath established the word by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. When he uttereth his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens. He causeth the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth, he maketh lightnings with rain, and bringeth forth the wind out of his treasures. Every man is brutish in his knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. For his molten image is a falsehood, and there's no breath in them. They are vanity and the work of errors. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. Now, the molten images are the images that have been forged by your emotional experience and the fires of your own emotion. They're the ones that are involuntary. The things that set you off. Either anger or lust. Or they're forged in the experience. It says they too are vanity and empty. You can't trust those emotions. They are vanity and the work of error. Which is an interesting way of putting it. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things. And Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. And what we're going to read in the letter to Jeremiah, or letter of Jeremiah, is a sermon, really, on that section that we've just read. Okay?
And this is in the Catholic Bible now, right?
Yeah. Would you get the other and give it to Daryl?
Before I get it.
It's behind Matt.
Who's got the Apocrypha? You want to read?
Okay.
A copy of a letter which Jeremiah sent to those who were to be taken to Babylon as captives by the king of the Babylonians to give them the message which God had commanded them. Because of the sins which you have committed before God, you will be taken to Babylon as captives by Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylonians. Therefore, when you have come to Babylon, you will remain there for many years, for a long time, up to 7 generations. After that, I will bring you away from there in peace.
And notice what we just studied in Genesis, that coming out of Egypt, they were to be in exile for 400 years until the sin of the Amorite was fulfilled. In Babylon, the exile is to last 7 generations until, literally, the same, if we could see it, until the sin of cause and effect or fairness.
So, I mean, is this the same type as captivity in Egypt?
It's different. The difference is that, yeah, because...
Because they'd already inherited the land, and then they...
Right.
They
lost. It comes after you know who you are. It comes when you sell out.
I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, the entire people...
That's right. Big deal. God... I mean, faith is the only thing. Faith can have no component of cause and effect. Faith can have no component, there can be no component in faith of fairness. There can be no component in faith of justice. There can be no component of reward or punishment. Faith is pure grace. What we've seen here is that faith also is made up of knowledge. Faith is knowledge of Him.
Now in Babylon, you will see gods made of silver and gold and wood, which are carried on men's shoulders and inspire fear in the heathen.
Now, again, see that your gold, your idols are carried on men's shoulders. That's the metaphor. You understand, now the battle is no longer against flesh and blood outwardly, it's against here.
Yeah.
Your idols are still, they need men's shoulders to carry them. I mean, stop and think. Stop and think of the stupidity of the things that you give importance to. You have to carry them around. I mean, that's pretty silly.
Yeah.
Understand how silly that is? I mean, if something is important... I know myself well enough to know that I shouldn't be trusted to carry it around. I mean, you know, it has to have some existence without my approval in order for me to give it any importance. If my acquiescence to it or acknowledgement of it is dependent, makes it...
It's dependent on my...
Yeah, if it's dependent on my acknowledgement of it, it's not too worthwhile. Because I know myself so well. Yeah, right. I wouldn't belong to any club that would have me as a member.
I wouldn't worship any island
required me to approve it.
Wouldn't worship any island would let me.
And that too. I can't wait to get them. But I can, never mind.
So take care not to become at all like the foreigners, or to let fear of these gods possess you when you see the multitude before and behind them worshiping them.
Like, and again, I mean, stop. What have we just seen the multitudes worshiping?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, patriotism.
Patriotism. Huh? But the point is, it's not that you're, you know, don't be just as dumb and be anti-war. I mean, both of them are just stupid things.
Yeah.
Pro-war or anti-war.
In favor of infanticide.
Let's take a real stand.
But say in your heart...
A good stand. Retroactive 50 years.
But say in your heart, it is thou, O Lord, whom we must worship. For my angel is with you, and he is watching your lives. Their tongues are smoothed by the craftsmen, and they themselves are overlaid with gold and silver, but they are false and cannot speak.
Now what's gold and silver? When you overlay an idea with gold and silver, it has two components. Gold means that it will bring you glory if accomplished, and silver means it will bring you redemption. Those are the two symbolisms that are unique to all ancient cultures. So if the idol is gold, you believe it will bring you glory and satisfaction. If the idol is silver, it'll bring you redemption. It'll get you out of your troubles. So, and some of them are overlaid with both gold and silver and precious stones. Someday we'll study the precious stones.
They are false and cannot speak. People take gold and make crowns for the heads of their gods as they would for a girl.
Shut up, Jackie.
As they would for a girl who loves ornaments. And sometimes the priests secretly take gold and silver from their gods and spend it upon themselves, and even give some of it to the harlots in the brothel. And they deck their gods out with garments like these
what
was
that
gods
for?
Of silver and gold and wood.
He went into
the
brothel.
Save themselves from rust and corrosion.
Listen.
And they have been dressed in purple robes. Their faces are white because of the dust from the temple which is thick upon them. Like a local ruler, the god holds a scepter, though unable to destroy anyone who offends it. It has a dagger in its right hand and has an axe, but it cannot save itself from war and robbers. Therefore, they are evidently not gods, and do not fear them.
Okay.
For just as one's dish is useless when it is broken, so are the gods of the heathen when they have been set up in the temples.
Y'all understand what they're talking about here. They're talking about the things that in your mind. They're talking about you, so don't depersonalize this. They're talking about your value systems, the things you hold dear, the things you hold important. I mean, don't read this as just some historical thing or something that's happening to someone else. Otherwise, you'll just prove you're in Babylon.
Amen.
If you don't understand it, stop the proceedings.
For just as one's dish is useless when it is broken, so are the gods of the heathen when they have been set up in the temples. Their eyes are full of the dust raised by the feet of those who enter. And just as the gates are shut on every side upon a man who has offended a king, as though he were sentenced to death, so the priests make their temples secure with doors and locks and bars, in order that they may not be plundered by robbers. They light lamps, even more than they light for themselves, so their gods can see none of them.
Now, how do we do that? How do we make the bars and guard, just like you know, some of the ancient churches hold and they guard all their relics, how do we internally guard? Or being offended.
Yeah.
Righteous indignation is the greatest, you know, that's why.
Well, I don't
know. Huh? Yeah. When you look up righteous indignation, there's a picture of Huffy.
It's a bearded guy.
They are just like a beam of the temple.
Where are you?
We're talking about self-righteousness.
They light lamps.
No, wait a minute. When I forgot where you are, you have to help me out.
That's
I lost my
verse.
Mind. Okay, give me a verse. I don't know.
19. 17. No, 19.
No, 18.
19. They light lamps. Even more than they like themselves, though their gods can see none of them. Does that jog anything? Because you stopped everything so you could expand.
Boy, that sounded like a bit of a shock.
Matt, they called him Matt the Brave.
Or Matt the Stupid. I forgot what he comes once every 3 weeks and he talks.
You know what Tim says every time he does something like that? You know what Tim Curtis says every time he does something like that?
No.
He says, oh, excuse me, I think I was momentarily demon-possessed.
I didn't really mean that.
Okay.
They're just like a beam of the temple, but men say their hearts have melted when worms from the earth devour them and their robes. What does that mean, that they're made of wood?
Wood,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and then that means they're made of something perishable. And yet, men say their hearts have melted for fear.
They do not notice when their faces have been blackened by the smoke of the temple. Bats, swallows, and birds light on their bodies and heads, and so do cats. Big surprise.
I bet it doesn't say big surprise.
From this, you will know that they are not gods, so do not fear them. Our refrigerator is not a god.
No, but you understand, we've seen it, and again, I have to pick on for a minute.
Again?
No, again, I have to pick on somebody. when the first time we went out to Rick's ranch and on the hot seat, and she was talking, and she was trying, and she was trying the best she could to give what was happening to her. But it was like she was talking a different language. There was no seeing what was happening. And all of, she was responding from fear. And I keep remembering that instance because I felt so totally helpless. I thought all was lost because I thought she couldn't hear what we were talking about, what we were about. And then all of a sudden, before I knew it, I mean, there's, you know, all of a sudden she's one of us. She's speaking the same language. She's seeing the same thing. But the thing that happens, Christ said, the reason they don't understand you is they can't hear your speech. It's like you're talking a different language. You begin to talk about the folly of idolatry in the world, and in the next sentence, they'll talk about the value of idolatry and think they're talking the same sentence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that happens.
You know what I mean?
People talk about in churches.
Say, oh, we believe the same thing. Go with their children.
Raising their children.
I mean, it's like you don't, you can't even believe that. I mean, it's like there was no touching. The words didn't touch. And so that's what this is about. Okay?
As for the gold, which they wear for beauty,
Wendell wants some recent tapes.
They will not shine unless someone wipes off the rust.
We have to wipe off some rust here about right now.
For even when they are being cast, they had no feeling. They are bought at any cost, but there is no breath in them. Having no feet, they are carried on men's shoulders, revealing to mankind their worthlessness. And those who serve them are ashamed, because through them these gods are made to stand, lest they fall to the ground.
That's interesting. They don't have any life of their own unless they're carried on men's shoulders.
Right.
If you
don't feed it, it'll
die stuff.
Yeah, that's wild.
If anyone sets one of them upright, it cannot move of itself. And if it is tipped over, it cannot straighten itself. But gifts are placed before them, just as before the dead. The priests sell the sacrifices that are offered to these gods and use the money. And likewise, their wives preserve some with salt, but give none to the poor or helpless.
I mean, stop a minute and think. Think of how, what percentage of the population, and again, I'm thinking of places like Dallas and Hollywood where there's nothing real, where are really, they're all priests that they're making, and they make their money from idolatry. They make their money from the service of idols. That's why they, I mean, it's a whole industry that's huge, and that's what they're talking about here. Okay. And I mean, this one gets me. Think how many people in the United States wouldn't have a job if there were no homeless people. Think about this, they're homeless pimps.
Oh, you mean like the...
All the shelters and all the welfare agencies and all the...
food banks,
food stamps.
But they don't even really want to solve the problem. They want to just...
They have a reason to not have it solved.
Yeah, it's what they are, what I said in that one show. I said they're program activists. They're not activists. They have nothing real. I mean, if there was no welfare, if there were no homeless, how many... Think of all these... idiots that would lose their jobs.
Or more than that, would on the streets.
Yeah.
20 to 1, 40. Yeah.
No, probably 80.
Well,
it's just ludicrous.
Then they'd be homeless.
I never had thought of that. Yeah. It was a very intelligent observation.
And so what if we can encourage every church, if we can just the people that say, We haven't talked about it, but we're going to start a program to go direct, to bounce over the hierarchies, to go directly to the people through the most innovative television commercials you can imagine, of national commercials, just to embarrass the snot out of everybody, to try to get people to band together and take in that human, a person.
Yeah.
instead of to leave somebody in the street and call themselves a house of God is an abomination. To say that publicly.
You just take a fraction of the churches to do that.
Yeah.
A few in a city.
Sacrifices to them may be touched by women in menstruation or at childbirth. Since you know by these things that they are not gods, do not fear them.
Okay, do you remember what?
Unclean.
Yeah, but I know, but I mean, this whole section is some, from Psalm 115 and 118 also. They have eyes that cannot see.
Yes.
They have ears that cannot hear.
Yeah.
They have.
No movement in their feet. They
and their hands are numb.
They have eyes.
Their mouths are numb.
Those who trust in idols look like the idols will become. Not to us,
Lord. Not to us. Not to us. And glory to you.
By
mercy and your truth, we give glory unto you.
Okay. Somebody pick a key.
Not to us, Lord, not to us, not to us, His glory
to the musicians.
Point your name only, that we give the glory to. If the nations ask, where is this God, we cannot hear. We reply that here is His universal sovereignty. But the idols they've created and sustained within their minds cannot help them when they're called on. They are lame, deaf, dumb, and blind. They have eyes that cannot see. They have mouths that cannot speak. Their noses cannot smell. There's no movement in their feet. They have ears that cannot hear. And their hands are numb. And those who trust in idols like the idols will become. That wasn't too bad.
Women serve meals for gods of silver and gold and wood. And in their temples the priests sit with their clothes rent, their heads and beards shaved, and their heads uncovered. They howl and shout before their gods as some do at a funeral feast for a man who has died.
That reminds me of what happens at Tilton's church. God bless that looks...
The priests take some of the clothing of their gods to clothe their wives and children. Whether one does evil to them or good, they will not be able to repay. They cannot set up a king or depose one. Likewise, they are not able to give either wealth or money. If one makes a vow to them and does not keep it, they will not require it. They cannot save a man from death or rescue the weak from the strong. They cannot restore sight to a blind man. They cannot rescue a man who is in distress. They cannot take pity on a widow or do good to an orphan. These things that are made of wood and overlaid with gold and silver are like stones from the mountain, and those who serve them will be put to shame. Why then must any one think that they are gods or call them gods?
Okay.
Besides, even the Chaldeans themselves dishonor them. For when they see a dumb man who cannot speak, they bring him, pray, Baal, that the man may speak as though Baal were able to understand. Yet they themselves cannot perceive this and abandon them, for they have no sense. And the women, with cords about them, sit along the passageways, burning brand for incense. And when one of them is led off by one of the passersby, and is laying with, she derides the woman next to her, because she was not as attractive as herself, and her cord was not broken.
Do you have any idea what they're talking about?
Yeah, all the virgins.
What does the cord mean?
He did me, but he didn't do you.
Just break the cord.
What had to happen in this society, in this section in Babylon, every woman had to serve as a temple prostitute for a period of time. And in that process, some of them weren't chosen, and that's what they're talking about here.
Whatever is done for them is false. Why then must anyone think that they are gods or call them gods? They are made by carpenters and goldsmiths, and they can be nothing but what the craftsmen wish them to be.
The men that make them will certainly not live very long themselves. How then can the things that are made by them be gods? They have left only lies and reproach for those who come after.
Well, I just remember that the one quote that I really like, that I'm glad that Brad put in that article, is that nothing that isn't at least 2,000 years old is any good.
Yeah, as you were reading that, I was just thinking of Bill Blass. I don't know why I would pick on Bill Blass, but
oh, yeah,
for 20 years, right? If you were cool, your blue blazer was a Bill Blass blazer. Bill's about to die, and it'll disappear. But it's been, if you were serving the god of serving the Park Cities, you had to have a Bill Blass blazer. Or a Cherokee.
But when war or calamity comes upon them, the priests consult together as to where they can hide themselves and their gods. How then can one fail to see that these are not gods, for they cannot save themselves from war or calamity? Since they are made of wood and overlaid with gold and silver, it will afterward be known that they are false. It will be manifest to all the nations and kings that they are not gods but the work of men's hands, and that there is no work of God in them. Who then can fail to know what they who then can fail to know that they are not gods?
Okay. Crystal.
For they cannot set up a king over a country or give rain to men. They cannot judge their own cause or deliver one who is wrong, for they have no power. They are like crows between heaven and earth. When fire breaks out in a temple of wooden gods overlaid with gold and silver, the priests will flee and escape, but the gods will be burnt in two like beams. Besides, they can offer no resistance to a king or any enemies. Why then must anyone admit or think that they are gods? Gods made of wood and overlaid with gold and silver are not able to save themselves from thieves and robbers. Strong men will strip them of their gold and silver and of the robes they wear, and go off with this booty, and they will not be able to help themselves. So it is better to be a king who shows his courage. So is it better to be a king who shows his courage, or a household utensil that serves its owner's need, than to be these false gods? Better even the door of a house that protects its contents than these false gods. Better also than a wooden pillar in a palace than these false gods. For sun and moon and stars.
This is what in Paul talks about. You know, in the house there are many vessels of wood and stone. And I mean, he's saying don't think one is any better than the other. They're all necessary. Okay.
For sun and moon and stars, shining and sent forth for service, are obedient. So also the lightning, when it flashes, is widely seen, and the wind likewise blows in every land. When God commands the clouds to go over the whole earth, they carry out his command, and the fire sent from above to consume mountains and woods does what it is ordered. But these idols are not to be compared with them in appearance or power. Therefore, one must not think that they are gods, nor call them gods, for they are not able either to decide a case or to do good to men. Since you know then that they are not gods, do not fear them. For they can neither curse nor bless kings. They cannot show signs in the heavens and among the nations, or shine like the sun or give light like the moon. The wild beasts are better than they are, for they can flee to cover and help themselves. So we have no evidence whatever that they are gods. Therefore, do not fear them. Like a scarecrow in a cucumber bed that guards nothing, so are their gods of wood, overlaid with gold and silver. In the same way, their gods of wood, overlaid with gold and silver, or like a thorn bush in a garden on which every bird sits, or like a dead body cast out in the darkness. By the purple and linen that rot upon them, you will know that they are not gods, and they will finally themselves be consumed and be a reproach in the land. Better, therefore, is a just man who has no idols, for he will be far from reproach.
Amen.
Yeah.
The purpose of these times, and remember, this was supposed to have been read when we're in the midst of a fast, that's a total fast, even from water, is you will find in a body of people that are as dissimilar as we are, that your level of irritability will have gotten it'll be on a hair trigger. And you'll find that all that those things that irritate you, the level of irritability,
is a manifestation of an idol. So the one that irritates you is in truth a blessing to you, so that you can see and cause the idol that you're worshiping to be marred. Now I know when you're in the midst of someone irritating you, this is really, but in truth, the one that irritates you and the one that angers you is the blessing, because they are revealing to you these false idols that are inside, and so that they can be marred. Now, once, according to the Avodah Zarah, which is the tract of the Talmud dealing with idolatry, once an idol is marred, it's scratched, then it's good for nothing. You can't use it for anything. And so it's in other words, the idol in you then, once it's seen to be futile, even though you still may act like you're worshiping it for a while, in truth, it's lost all its power. So that you might be free and walk in freedom and truth. Let's take about a 2-minute break, and then we'll go back and read the Song of the Three Young Men, which is my favorite one of these. The Song of the Three Young Men is interesting in that it's an addition. It was originally in the book of Daniel. In fact, its name is Azariah and the Song of the Three Young Men. And Azariah is one of the three young men, so he's allegedly the one that wrote it. Bel and the Dragon and Susanna are the three books that were all, at one time, for most of what we know as history, they were included as part of Daniel, but for some reason they got split out at different times. This is a story of three young men who refused to worship the god Bel in Babylon. And the word, and if you think about it, it has an incredible importance today. They refused at all costs to give importance to what Bel symbolized, which was cause and effect. Cause and effect is the god of Babylon. The whore of Babylon is the goddess of cause and effect. And for those of you, if you don't remember, Bel was a god in Babylon, who was allegedly 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide. It was solid gold. And it was, structurally, it couldn't stand up by itself. And so they had to take all of the gold that they'd stole from the temple in Jerusalem and build its base so that it could stand. And that then became, symbolically, it's a metaphor for the god of cause and effect in us. If we will take and put all of those temple the appliances of the temple back in their proper place, the god of cause and effect will fall by its own volition. That includes all of the candlesticks. And we put them in their proper place by understanding them. Just like we open the seals on the Ark of the Covenant by understanding the seals, so we place the appliances or appurtenances. Yeah. Back in the temple by understanding them in their proper place. Now, if any of you have any difficulty of understanding how Bel is worshipped by you this minute, then we need to talk. We need to have a chat. You need to produce your strong cause. Bel is your life. You worship cause and effect. Worship means to give importance to. You say you worship God, but in truth you worship cause and effect. You believe this is necessary for that to happen. You believe this impulse is required for that response. That is cause and effect. You need to get this right so this thing over here will be done. Everything about most of your day is a worship of Bel. Now this story, to have any meaning for you, is a revelation of what would happen if you stopped this worship. The system would require that you be thrown into the fire because you'd be a threat. Your very existence of not buying into the lie of cause and effect would be a threat to every form of thought there is in the universe. and they either literally or symbolically would throw you into the fiery furnace. So this is a story of three men who did not buy into the lie of cause and effect. Understand that?
And they walked about in the midst of the flames, singing hymns to God.
Well, wait a minute. Let's go. Let me read a little bit. Okay. Show you that, where this went. Okay. Let me try to read this quickly. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits. Oh, that's what I just said. And breadth 6 cubits. And set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the consulars, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the consulars, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of all the provinces were gathered together. This was 127 provinces from Ethiopia all the way past India. Were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And whoso falleth not down and worship shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Therefore, at that time when all the people had heard the sounds of the music, all the people, all the nations, and the language, and all languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore, at the time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews, they spake unto and said unto the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, and the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worship, that he should be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if you be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the music, you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well, but if you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this manner. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1/7 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the mighty host, the most mighty men that were in his army, to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and go and cast them into the fiery, burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace.
And they walked about in the midst of the flames, singing hymns to God and blessing the Lord. Then Azariah stood and offered this prayer. In the midst of the fire, he opened his mouth and said, Blessed art thou, O Lord, God of our fathers and worthy of praise,
and thy name is glorified forever. For thou art just in all that thou hast done to us, and all thy works are true, and thy ways right, and all thy judgments are truth. Thou hast executed true judgments in all that thou hast brought upon us, and upon Jerusalem, the holy city of our fathers. For in truth and justice thou hast brought us, has brought all this upon us because of our sins.
And notice, there's not one hint of victimhood. Not the slightest instance of heroic self-justification. Not one pulse, heartbeat of, but we, you know, that what they were doing had some self-righteousness in it. Please hear that. The only time you can know that, the only time you can walk before God without victimhood or self-righteousness, is when you know that you are the chief of sinners. If you don't know that, if you don't know that within you is all sin, then you cannot know what we talk about here. Because you'll always be a victim of somebody.
For we have sinfully and lawlessly departed from thee, and have sinned in all things, and have not obeyed thy commandments. We have not observed them or done them, as thou hast commanded us that it might go well with us. So all that thou hast brought upon us, and all that thou hast done to us, thou hast done in true judgment. Thou hast given us into the hands of the lawless enemies, most hateful rebels, and to an unjust king, the most wicked in all the world.
You can understand why the Protestants took this out of their Bible.
And now we cannot open our mouths. Shame and disgrace have befallen thy servants and worshippers. For thy name's sake, do not give us up utterly, and do not break thy covenant, and do not withdraw thy mercy from us. For the sake of Abraham, thy beloved, and for the sake of Isaac, thy servant, and Israel, thy holy one, to whom thou didst promise to make their descendants as many as the stars of heaven, and as the sand on the shore of the sea. For we, O Lord, have become fewer than any nation, and are brought low this day in all the world because of our sins. And at this time there is no prince, or prophet, or leader, no burnt offering, or sacrifice, or oblation, or incense, no place to make an offering before thee, or to find mercy. Yet with a contrite heart and a humble spirit may we be accepted, as though it were with burnt offerings of rams and bulls, and with tens of thousands of fat lambs. Such may our sacrifice be in thy sight this day, and may we wholly follow thee, and there will be no shame for those who trust in thee. And now with all our heart we follow thee, we fear thee and seek thy face. Do not put us to shame, but deal with us in thy forbearance and in thy abundant mercy. Deliver us in accordance with thy marvelous works, and give glory to thy name, O Lord. Let all who do harm to thy servants be put to shame. Let them be disgraced and deprived of all power and dominion, and let their strength be broken. Let them know that thou art the Lord, the only God, glorious over the whole world.
Right.
Now the king's servants who threw them in did not cease feeding the furnace fires with naphtha, pitch, tow, and brush. And the flame streamed out above the furnace 49 cubits.
You know how far that is?
Really don't.
How much is a cubit? A cubit's 2 feet. So it's essentially 100 feet.
Whoa. And it broke through and burned those of the Chaldeans.
It's not saying it's going up. It streamed. Well, it streamed out above the furnace. Yes, it does. 49 cubits. The flame was that high.
Yeah.
And it broke through and burned those of the Chaldeans whom it caught about the furnace. But the angel of the Lord came down into the furnace to be with Azariah and his companions, and drove the fiery flame out of the furnace, and made the mist of the furnace like a moist whistling wind, so that the fire did not touch them at all, or hurt or trouble them.
Now, that's the definition of peace. It's never circumstances that try you. It's the judgments you make about the circumstances. And if you see clearly, if your mind, if you are confessing, if what you are saying and thinking is the same as what God is thinking, then there's no thing that can touch you. But if you try with the slightest instance to say, why me? Why has all this befallen me? I'm this neat guy. The slightest instant of that within you. And the way you say that is by saying, you say to God, I am this neat guy, if you say you're a victim of somebody else. You understand that? If you make me the jester in your court, in your temple, and blame things on me, in other words, you're my victim because Oli's so mean to you, or your boss is so mean, or somebody else is so mean, or your husband's so mean, or your boyfriend's so mean, or whatever, then you cannot be in the state that these men are in, because you'll be in a state of victimhood. Okay.
Then the three, as with one mouth, praised and glorified and blessed God in the furnace, saying, Blessed art thou, O Lord God of our fathers, and to be praised and highly exalted forever. And blessed is thy glorious holy name, and to be highly praised and highly exalted forever. Blessed art thou in the temple of thy holy glory, and to be extolled and highly glorified forever.
It's like what we do at Passover.
Blessed art thou who sittest upon cherubim and lookest upon the deeps, and to be praised and highly exalted forever. Blessed art thou upon the throne of thy kingdom.
See, what we need to do, what we need to do is, we like the Haggadah, but we need to make our own Haggadah things. I mean, not we need to make our own customs for each, because this should be responsive. Okay.
Blessed art thou upon the throne of thy kingdom, and to be extolled and highly exalted forever. Blessed art thou in the firmament of heaven, and to be sung and glorified forever. Bless the Lord, all the works of the Lord. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you heavens. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you angels of the Lord. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord of all the waters above the heaven. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, all powers. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, sun and moon. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, stars of heaven. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, all rain and dew. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, all winds. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, fire and heat. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, winter cold and summer heat. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, dews and snows. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, nights and days. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, light and darkness. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, ice and cold. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, frosts and snows. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, lightnings and clouds. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever.
Okay. You notice, remember in the New Testament it says that every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Now, the dispensationalists and the fundamentalists say that that's going to happen someday in the future, far in the future, in the millennium. We don't say that. We say that everything now, no matter what it appears, is every tongue is confessing today. Every knee is bending today. Every thing is blessing him today. All that's necessary is for us to know that.
So you're either blessing him or you're blessing
Bell. Really, in this, you're either blessing God or blessing Bell, the God of cause and effect. But it's also, if you're not blessing him, you're blessing yourself. Okay.
Let the earth bless the Lord. Let it sing to him. Let it sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, mountains and hills. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, all things that grow on the earth. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you springs. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, seas and rivers. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you whales and all creatures that move in the waters. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, all birds of the air. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, all beasts and cattle. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you sons of men. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, O Israel. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you priests of the Lord. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you servants of the Lord. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, spirits and souls of the righteous. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, you who are holy and humble in heart. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. Bless the Lord, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. Sing praise to him and highly exalt him forever. For he has rescued us from Hades and saved us from the hand of death and delivered us from the midst of the burning fiery furnace. From the midst of the fire he has delivered us. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. For his mercy endures forever. Bless him, all who worship the Lord, the God of gods. Sing praise to him and give thanks to him, for his mercy endures forever.
Amen. Now, then it picks up here. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, Did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. Then he answered and said, Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Now, and his presence became the whistling wind and the cooling mist. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes and governors and captains and the king's counselors being gathered together saw these men, upon whose body the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, language, which spake anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other god that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Now, at the same time, Daniel was the companion of these, except he was above them. And that this, because of this elevation of Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel was also elevated. And Daniel then became the most trusted counselor, and he, in fact, became his most, according to the Zend Avesta, his most cherished or most promising pupil when he became in his old age was a man named Zoroaster, who wrote the Zend Avesta. And he became the first of a tribe of people in the Persian Babylonian, who became the Magi. And the writings of Daniel that predicted the promised one of the nations came from this point in time. And that's what sent the three Magi to Bethlehem to pay homage with gold and frankincense and myrrh at the feet of the baby, the God of this world, the God of the universe. But the connection between Babylon / Persia and the Magi and this time period is really fascinating. Yeah. Okay? We have two more of these to read. We'll do that Thursday. Baruch and Susanna. Oh, Susanna, won't you
come? Don't go in the garden.
Don't go in the garden.
By yourself.
Not Susanna, excuse me.
Don't go in the garden.
We already read Susanna. Now we got to read Baruch. And Prayer of Manasseh. Yeah,
we read the Prayer of Manasseh, or did we?
No. Susanna.
We didn't read Susanna.
No, we didn't.
Yeah. We read Susanna. Which did we read?
They read the Prayer of Manasseh.
We've read Letter of Jeremiah.
Yeah.
We read the Song of the Three Young Men. We read the Prayer of Manasseh Sunday. Okay, we only have one thing to read then. We have Baruch to read.
Brains are addled from the fast.
We have Baruch. Okay, we have Baruch to read.
What?
Thursday. Baruch.
I don't know what the other one is.
Baruch.
Okay.